Good morning. Is that Mark and Mike?
It is.
You've got
the
us.
The big two.
Wait, there's a big one and a sort of medium one.
Oh, how goes it these days?
Very good indeed. Very busy. I'm, you know, raising a lot of money for underprivileged children in the four quadrants of the world, designing golf courses. I'm playing in a few senior tournaments with Jack Nicklaus as a partner. He's not a bad partner, you know.
Yeah, he can still get it around once in a while, huh?
And so, and I'm working on my ranch. I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I work all day, and I'm 79 now, and I'm working out like a Trojan, so I want to live to 100.
So retirement is good? Seems kind of busy to me.
Yeah, I tell you one thing. One of the worst words ever discovered is retirement. They've done a survey that most of these CEOs that now retire after being very active, and they sit down on their butts and they die within 3 years. The one thing you got to do, you got to keep that body moving. And I met the most remarkable man in India, and he gave me his opinions on longevity. But the most important thing he said, the less you eat, the longer you live.
Interesting. Well, I guess if you eat the right things just a little bit, it'll work out well for you then.
Yeah, but I mean, one out of 20,000 people exercise and eat properly. People are not interested really in health. They dream about it, but my son, for example, he lives in Florida. He's a type 1 diabetic, and they were saying that there are going to be 100 million Americans with diabetes in 40 to 50 years. Now, I find that so sad. This great country, the greatest country in the world, really are not caring, I mean, about health. And, I mean, the worst eaters on the planet. I mean, and heart attacks, and one out of two men getting cancer. We've got to start educating the children in the schools. We've got to do it. Not purely academic things. We've got to give them the normal facts of life.
But now here's the question. You know, you got somebody like Tiger Woods who, you know, plays golf but probably looks like a linebacker in the NFL who works out, eats all the right stuff, but yet his body's not doing very well. You know, when you look back at your career, I don't ever remember you talking about having any injuries that may have really impacted your game. Did you?
Well, first of all, how do you know that Tiger Woods eats well?
True.
I don't think he does. I know he exercises. But I don't think he eats well. I mean, that's my opinion. I've been around him a couple of times. I'm really not in a position to say it, but I'd lay odds that what he thinks and what average people think of eating correctly is very, very incorrectly. But be that as it may, everybody's body is different. I worked out even the night before I won the U.S. Open. I wanted to beat Nicklaus to win the Grand Slam, and I was so obsessed, and I practiced so hard, and I went into almost a trance. And I was squatting the night before. Now, I think this is in 1965, where you didn't have all this modern gyms. And I was squatting with 325 pounds, and everybody ridiculed it and said, you cannot do weight training and play golf. And even at the age, I'm in my 80th year now, I still push at least some days 400 pounds with my legs, other days 300 pounds with my legs, 1,300 crunches, some with 100-pound weight on my chest. So, I mean, you know, the knowledge of health and exercise has been very poor up to now.
You know, and that's the question I wanted to ask you going back to 1965, because Rory McIlroy is coming up on, you know, the Masters at Augusta in April for his chance at completing the career Grand Slam. You know, what was going through your mind? I mean, you knew you were going to do that, didn't you? You knew you were going to complete that slam, and that was the thing that was on your mind. How difficult is it to build up to that week knowing what's at stake?
It's very difficult, and that's a very good question. And I made a promise to the USGA that if I ever won the US Open, and I said, when I win the US Open, and I made this promise in Pittsburgh, I said, I will donate my check back to the USGA for cancer, which my mother died of, and junior golf. And I said, I don't care what it is, whether it's 50,000, a million, whatever it is, that's a promise. And I focused and exercised and had an obsession about winning. And even I went when I was playing in the tournament, I never went out of my room one night for dinner. I went to a Catholic church. I'm not a Catholic. I went to a Catholic church. I didn't pray to win. I prayed for patience, for courage. And you know, I was really so focused. I was in an absolute trance, as I say. And this is what one's got to do nowadays. That, you know, competition has always been tough. And this is what I try and teach young people. Mark and Mike, isn't it sad? The greatest country in the world, the best, let's take golf, the greatest facilities in the world, the best golf courses, supposedly the best coaches, that's a debatable subject,
right?
The most money, the best climate, and the Ryder Cup, America get pounded 8 out of 10 times. Inexcusable. America should annihilate those people. But there's this great sense of entitlement in young people, and you're not entitled to a damn thing. And then you take tennis, the best tennis courts, the best facilities, the same as golf. No American champions, all ex-communistic countries or foreign countries. It's hogwash.
Yeah, it's to the point where it's almost like we have too much, and there's too much going on, and there's too many other things to focus on. And, you know, and that's – when you look at the Ryder Cup, Gary, do you see – you said the sense of entitlement. I really only got the impression out of really two guys, Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed – and maybe a little bit of Jimmy Walker because it was his, you know, one of his first experiences there. I only got a sense out of at least Reed and Spieth that they were more excited to be there than they were entitled to be there. And that goes kind of back to your point.
Yes. No. Well, I must say that Jordan Spieth is a wonderful young man with a great future and a very great manners. And, you know, Winston Churchill, my great hero, the greatest man that lived in the last 100 years, said, manners maketh a man. And he does. But we've got to wake the youth up of America. There's no question they've got to be, you know, you take a university, they go to university and they're blessed to go to a Harvard or a Stanford or a Yale or a Princeton. And 40% of them are drinking, 40% are smoking, 40% are having all these nude parties and thinking it's a ball. And then if they don't do well, Dad, send some more money, and they send it. If they fail, well, we'll try again next year. Just try that in China or somewhere and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, how do we change it? It's a culture of entitlement, but also a very selfish, you know, there's a selfish mentality that, and I think that came into play. You saw the American players, they don't play a lot of team sports. These guys, they're starting to specialize in golf or tennis or swimming or even football now at a very young age. They don't get socialized. I mean, how do we turn this ship around?
Well, first of all, it's parental guidance. And for people to understand, you know, this land of milk and honey, to make young people, they got to start showing movies or videos in schools of places like China and India. I mean, in India, I design golf courses there. Some places are having rats to eat. I mean, they live in poverty like you've never seen, having to really bathe in sewage water. They need to be showing more films to make children in this country realize how lucky they are. They need a rude awakening, honestly. I mean, and to also make them understand. I mean, you know, today, when I do a speech, I always say, God bless America. You know, it upsets some people. I mean, and I just keep doing it, and I'm going to do it until the day I die.
Good for you.
The thing is that you've got to get these young people to understand the flag of America, what America stood for, the great Samaritan that America has been. I mean, and you've got to educate them. It all comes to education. You know, you take my country, South Africa. If you go to one of our leading schools in South Africa, they are 10 times better than American schools. You go to school properly dressed. They say a prayer in the school. Now, you cannot do any harm by saying a prayer. Cannot do any harm. I don't care if you have divisions, have a prayer, just saying, thank you for letting us live in America. You don't have to have any particular religion, but make them be thankful. I mean, in our schools, they got the dress code. They stand up when the teacher comes in the classroom. They speak five languages. Five languages. I mean, in mathematics and geography and history, they're way ahead of you guys. So it all comes back to the schools. We got to get it in the schools, make the kids realize what this great country they're living in.
Mm. Amen, brother. Amen. Again, we're talking with Hall of Famer Gary Player. And Gary, let's focus, because a lot of the focus right now is on Tiger Woods and yes. His chipping game and his back. You know, we know he had a problem the other day and had to withdraw. From what I'm hearing, it was just a muscular thing that went up into his back. It's not a re-injury. But when we start talking about the chipping game, I've got two questions. You know, the first thing is everybody seems to question what Tiger's doing, and everybody's always questioned what Tiger's done. This is his fourth coach. He's been successful in basically redesigning his golf swing three times. Number one, what makes people think it's not going to happen the fourth time after, you know, X amount of rounds or X amount of time? And when we talk about his chipping right now, it's awful, but you know, I see what he's trying to do, and I see it's going to get better. I think it will get better. It's just going to take time, don't you think?
Well, first of all, if I heard you correctly, he has not rebuilt his swing successfully three or four times. It's been the complete opposite. When he won, this is the most amazing scenario I've seen in golf in my lifetime. When he won the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach by 15 shots, here, at that particular point, he was the most talented golfer the world had ever seen. He was going to smash Jack Nicklaus's record into smithereens. He would have won 20, 22, 24 major championships. The next week, he's having a lesson and changing his swing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he changes his swing for the worst. And then after that, he goes to another man who gets him doing things that were quite strange. I mean, not the great theory that Ben Hogan, the greatest striker of a ball, advocated. And now he has three knee operations. He has a back operation. He's been through a lot of trials and tribulations. And, you know, I'm pulling for him to do well. I want to see him win tournaments. I want to see him win majors. But it's very doubtful. And now it almost looks, and the TV commentators are scared to say it, it looks like he's got the yips on the chips.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, the man here was the greatest short game player in the world, and I watched him. He hit the ball over the green, over the gallery's head, mm-hmm. with a chip shot, and then duffed the next one and hit the next one 20 foot from the hole. And if he has, I'm saying if, it looks like it, but I cannot say for sure. But if he's got the yips on the chips, it's all over, because you cannot. You cannot have the yips and chips and putting and be a champion. You can't do it. Once you get the yips, you die with the yips. It stays with you forever. The only man who overcame it to a real degree, or one of the few, was Bernard Langer. I mean, he used to four-putt, you know, two, three times around, and then he went to the long putter. Now the long putter's coming to an end, and all these guys that are using the long putter, they're in serious trouble next year.
Well, Gary, in October, you said you thought you could fix Tiger in an hour. Are you still so confident after seeing him launch one over the gallery?
Well, if he has got the yips, nobody can help him.
Yeah.
But if he hasn't, I know I could help him, because when I see the things he's doing, and you know, when you go to a coach, I mean, I don't want to criticize the coaches that Tiger went to, but when you're in Tiger's position, you go to coaches that have actually been in the arena, that have played and won major championships and have knowledge and experience what it's like to be in that arena. There are only a few people in the world that ever have that opportunity. And I just knew that I could help Tiger. I could see where he was going wrong mentally. I could see where he was going wrong physically. And I could see where he was going wrong theoretically in the swing. I mean, the things that he was doing in the swing were so bad, it was so obvious, and nobody's telling him.
So
that as it may, I mean, you know, he has his choice. I'm a big Tiger Woods fan. I want to see him do well. It's imperative that he does well. He brings more people to the galleries. He gets better TV ratings. Worldwide, they're watching him. He's an icon. And it's so sad for me to see what is happening. I mean, it's just unnecessary. But be that as it may, he has the choice.
And you'll take his call?
He would never call. I know Jack Nicklaus has offered, and I know Lee Trevino offered, and I've offered. But that's his choice. You know, you can't condemn a man. He must. That's the free choice you have. But, I mean, my goodness me. The people he's going to have been hurting him, not helping him, hurting him. I mean, they're blatant errors in his swing, blatant. And in his makeup, I see blatant mistakes. But that's only, it's only my opinion, you know. Everybody's got an opinion.
Well, you know, there is a question, and before we have to let you go, there's something I've always been curious about. You were the first, you're really a trailblazer setting the path for today's modern player, and by going out and choosing to travel the world and play, really before anybody else did that. I mean, it's a fascinating thing to do. It's probably a risky decision to make financially. When you did so, it wasn't the norm. What went into your thinking? What was your mindset when you said, hey, I'm going to go out and play around the world no matter what it takes? Because you were really the first to do that. So what went through your mind?
Well, I suffered as a kid. You know, my mother died when I was 8. My father made £100 a month working 10,000 feet in a gold mine down in the ground. My brother went to war at 17. At 17, and he said to my mother and father, I'm going to fight with the Americans and the British. They begged him not to go at 17, and he did. My sister's at boarding school. I travel an hour and a half to school and an hour and a half back, and I come to a dark house, and there's nobody there. And, I mean, I had to survive. And so what was your question? Sorry, I've got a little carried away.
Well, when you made the decision to go off and travel the world and play, when most people weren't even doing that, they were staying in the U.S. or they were staying in Europe, you went out and said, I'm playing everywhere. What was the...
Correct. So I said to myself, I don't want to be the best golfer in America. I don't want to be the best golfer in South Africa or England. I want to have the best record in golf in the world. And I do have it. Nobody has the world record that I have. And it's easy to play in your own country, but you travel to China or India or Australia or America or to South Africa and play against the locals with time changes and different food and different editorials and cultures, it's not easy. It's a challenge. That's what I wanted to do, and I'm very blessed and I'm grateful, very, very thankful that I was able to achieve that. And I'm so pleased I did that because it was a great challenge. When I first came to this great country, it took 40 hours, stopping 4 times, 6 children, and arriving here. And, I mean, I had to win the tournament to break even. There was no prize money. When you're traveling with 6 children and a wife, they all ate like it was the Last Supper.
Yeah. That really makes you want to win, doesn't it? Just to be able to pay for the trip, doesn't it?
No. It sure does. I said, if you can keep your head down like that when you play golf, you'll never lose.
Well, Gary, as always, we really appreciate you coming on the show, and we always look forward to having you on again.
Thank you, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks a lot. Bye. That's Gary Player, Hall of Famer.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Just wind him up and let him go.
True.
I mean, that guy has forgotten more great stories than we'll ever know.
I do have to disagree with him that Tiger